give myself a good talking to. I'm under the voice in my head.
I hope you never lose your sense of wonder. You get your fill to eat, but always keep that hunger. May you never take one single breath for granted. God forbid love ever leave. Choice to sit it out or dance. I hope you dance. I hope you dance. I hope you never fear those mountains.
The machines don't leave no paper trail. The billionaires don't want you to vote this year. We'll send your.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
A public defender has begun using Ohio's amendment that bans gay marriage to block prosecution of domestic abuse in unmarried heterosexual relationships. Passed in November, the Ohio amendment, in addition to banning gay marriage or civil unions, also prevents the state, counties, and cities from offering domestic partner benefits. However, the way the amendment is worded, it also bans creating or recognizing legal status for relationships of unmarried individuals that would give their relationship rights similar to marriage. On at least two occasions, the Cuyahoga County Public Defender's Office has argued that under the amendment, spousal abuse laws do not apply to unmarried couples. Lawyers told the Cleveland Plains Dealer they believe the amendment is a violation of the U.S. Constitution's 14th Amendment, which guarantees equal protection under the law.
St. Louis has become a hotbed of labor unrest lately. 1,700 nurses at St. John's Medical Center have been on strike for over a month with no new talks scheduled. Issues include the nurses having a voice in patient care. Nurses went on strike December 15th in St. Louis. They're still walking the picket lines Tuesday, January 19th. They're seeking pay parity with suburban St. Louis teachers. The teachers in the 32,000-student district rejected the St. Louis School District's final offer, and even though a teacher's strike in St. Louis would be illegal, the teachers' union there has authorized one anyway. The St. Louis Symphony Orchestra is also out in a labor dispute that has scrapped a scheduled concert this month featuring guest conductor Itzhak Perlman. The musicians have rejected a contract that includes a pay cut. On top of all that, Ford plans to close its Hazelwood plant in St. Louis, wiping out 2,700 jobs. That plant makes Explorers and Mercury Mountaineers.
To protest changes in patient and staffing ratios, nurses in California will be holding a funeral today in the state capitol. More than 1,500 members of the California Nurses Association are expected to attend. Prior to today's action, the association filed a lawsuit in Sacramento Superior Court against Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and the Department of Health. The suit says that the decision to roll back patient safety standards in California hospitals sets a dangerous precedent that threatens decades of health and safety protections for patients.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. FairJobs.org says over half the jobs that were created during the first Bush administration were agency temp and contingency jobs. The group says wages were stagnant for all sectors of the workforce. At least 5 million workers lost their health insurance, and outsourcing of jobs accelerated. FairJobs.org says efforts are underway to organize contingent workers, but many obstacles, including a Bush labor ruling that requires permission of temp agencies before workers can organize, stand in the way.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Tom DeLay is not merely covered in political slime. He seems to ooze it from within. Even when he makes a public show of trying to wash his hands of some of the unethical sleaze attached to him, the Republican majority leader ends up with more sleaze on him than ever, and he spreads it all over Congress. Delay is so nasty that even the meek and weak House Ethics Committee had no choice but to publicly admonish him 3 times last year for various unethical lapses. Also, he's in danger of being indicted by a grand jury in Texas for what amounts to the illegal laundering of corporate money for state legislative elections. His Texas legal problem is sticky for Tom, since his own party's rules call for any indicted leaders to resign from their leadership post. No problem, figured Tom the Sleaze. I'll just get the GOP caucus to eliminate this bothersome rule. Last November, they did just that. However, there was such an outpouring of public disgust at this I'm-above-the-law ploy that even Delay had to back off. In early January, he got the caucus to reverse itself, claiming that he didn't want to provide an issue for his political opponents. He was hailed by his colleagues as a magnanimous, selfless leader, with one Republican gushing, "I feel like we've just taken a shower." No, you've just been taken. In the same meeting, Delay got the GOP majority to fix the House Ethics Committee so it will be unable to pursue future cases against him. Under previous rules, if the two Republicans on the committee and the two Democrats could not agree about pursuing a complaint, the case went to a special subcommittee for further investigation. Under Tom's new rule, however, a split vote means the ethics complaint is automatically dropped. So simply by asserting party loyalty, Delay can avoid any more annoying inquiries into his ethics. This is Jim Hightower saying, not only is Tom ethically impaired, but now so is the entire House.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, have you heard in the news, in the great newscasts on all our various network television and radio stations, have you heard in the news how many people have lost their jobs in the last month? How many manufacturing jobs have vanished? How many people have lost their health insurance? How many people have declared bankruptcy? How many companies are working aggressively to bust unions? You haven't? It might be because business news these days is nothing but business news. I mean, what happened to labor news? What happened to a balanced discourse in America? The reason not 5 minutes ago, I had a conversation with Louise, who produces this program, where she had been 10 minutes ago talking with a guy with a company that books conservatives. And this is what brings all this up for me. And it's such a classic illustration of this. This is a conservative company, in quotes, that books conservative guests onto talk shows. And they, you know, I'm on the list, right? And so they just assumed I was a conservative talk show. And he calls up and he's pitching guests. And we, you know, I like to have conservatives on the program, as you know. And many of them, after they've looked at my website, they say, no, I won't go on the show, unfortunately, because I would like to have a conservative on, you know, every day or every other day anyway to discuss things with, as it were, to model how to win the water cooler war. Well, you know, how about and he had this one person that he was pitching to us, and he says, well, you know, he's concerned about the trade policies with China. And Louis says, well, Tom's going to agree with him on that. And, you know, we want to find an area of disagreement that we can debate about. And he said something else, and it was something else that I would have agreed with him on, because there are a lot of areas of agreement, frankly, between liberals and conservatives. And finally, he said, well, what would something that Tom disagrees about be? And Louis said, the free market. And this guy said, totally straight, he said he would disagree with the free market. And Louis said, yeah. And he said, nobody disagrees with the free market. And Louis said, well, you know, Tom's of the opinion that we should have, that there is no such thing as a free market, that it's a made up phrase, that the market exists as a function of government. It's created by, you know, our money is created by government, our tax dollars, our contracts are enforced by our courts. The rules of the game of business are defined by we, the people. And Tom believes that the rules of the game of business, that is the marketplace, should be regulated and defined in such a way that it helps preserve the middle class in America rather than simply, you know, making China rich and impoverishing America. And there's this long pause, and this guy, this conservative, says, you know, I think I agree. And it's like, If you can turn around a conservative that fast, this is a guy who makes a living being a conservative. Here's the point. The real story is not getting out there. It's just not getting out there. I even listen to liberal talk radio, and half the time I don't hear the real story. I mean, there's some really great folks who are doing really good liberal talk radio. Randy Rhodes, for example, who I've filled in for. I think it's just doing an absolute marvelous job. Mike Malloy, I have tremendous respect for. But there are a lot of folks doing liberal talk radio who are doing the same thing conservative talk radio. You know, it's like, well, let's try to deal with the shock stuff, or let's just talk about the news of the day and never dig a layer deeper. The way that in my opinion, Randy and Mike and I and a few others, Tony Trupiano, dig a layer deeper. And the cons never deeper. I mean, it's an unspoken rule. You don't talk. The other day I was watching one of these news programs. I think it was Chris Matthews. And he was going around the room. He had four journalists on. It must have been the Sunday program. He had four journalists on, and he was saying, well, you know, why do you think it is that so many, and I forget the details of the question, but it was something on the variation of why do you think it is that so many Americans think that Saddam had something to do with 9/11, or that Social Security is in a crisis, or whatever. One of those things that Americans are horribly misinformed about. That you know, 70% of Bush voters thought that there were Iraqis flying the airplanes on 9/11. There were Iraq. Not only were there no Iraqis, Iraq had absolutely nothing to do with 9/11 whatsoever. No connection. No connection to Al-Qaeda. Iraq, Saddam Hussein, and Osama bin Laden hated each other. Osama bin Laden tried to get the Saudis to invade Iraq, to throw out Saddam Hussein. He wanted to kill Hussein as much or more than he wanted to kill us. Hussein was his first target. So why is it that 70% of Americans who voted for Bush thought that Iraq had something to do with 9/11? And he goes around the room, and all these people offer all these opinions, and none of them said, well, maybe it's because there are so few voices on radio or television who are speaking the uncomfortable truths. Bill Moyers just left PBS, being replaced in essence by David Brancaccio. We'll see how he does. I'm assuming he's going to do a great job. I don't know him. I've met Bill Moyers a couple of times, and I have tremendous respect for him. That's a lot. But the question. And being replaced by Tucker Carlson, right? Tucker Carlson is coming on public television. Sigh, right? There are so few voices. Could it have something to do with the fact that there are about 11 companies that control over 90% of all radio, television, and magazines and newspapers in the United States in terms of readership? About a dozen companies, a handful of companies. And their interests, by and large, are the same as the interests of the Bush administration. That is to say, when the Bush administration says, yeah, we'll do things that'll help, you know, large corporations. We'll help you bust up your unions. We'll help you gobble up your competitors. We'll help you prevent entrepreneurs from competing with you. We'll help you lower your labor costs. When the Bush administration says these things, of course these corporations go, hey, cool, you're our guy. We'll spend millions for your inauguration. We need more truth tellers in America. I consider myself one. I consider you one. If you're listening to this program, tag, you're it. You are a truth teller now also. Our program today in our first hour, are we having a party or a war? What is it? In our second hour, why should we help Bush buddies make a fortune when there are things, there are some things, there are in fact some things that government can do better than private industry. There are many things that private industry does better than government. I would not want to buy a government-made computer, government-made shoes, government-made jeans. Government should not be in the business of manufacturing product. But there are some things that the government does better than private industry. One of them, in my opinion, is administering Social Security. We'll get into that. Our NLP class this afternoon, we're going to be comparing, you know, what was it about JFK and Churchill and George W. Bush that was consistent, and what was different, and how in their techniques of communication, what can we learn from this? On WorldNet Daily, one of the right-wing websites here, Joseph Farah's G2 Bulletin was posted. This quote from this G2 Bulletin, this weekly online intelligence newsletter. Female interrogation techniques. See, what they're finding, let me give you the background on this before we get in. What they're finding is that they're getting no useful intelligence out of these people in Guantanamo Bay in our concentration camps down there. They're getting no useful intelligence from the people that we have shipped off to other countries to torture, to Jordan, to Pakistan, to Egypt. They're getting no useful intelligence from the various prisoners that we've taken. Basically, they're not getting any. And particularly with regard to the possibility of future attacks on the United States. Now, why would that be? The take of the conservatives is that it's women's fault. I mean, you know, everything, of course, in the conservative worldview is women's fault. It all started with Eve. But here, female interrogation techniques are ineffective because they fail to provide useful information, and the detainees, once released, communicate to other personnel that there is nothing to be afraid of from female interrogators. Just maintain your innocence and give no information, and they will release you in 72 hours, says the memo. Well, I'll tell you, the reason why both female and male interrogators, and the majority of the interrogators, of course, are men. You just can't blame this on women. The reason why female and male interrogators are getting no useful information from these guys is because they don't have any. Well, we just need to torture them a little harder. We've killed over 20 of them in the process of interrogating them now. Not to mention the 40 or 50 that seem to have died in interrogation in countries to which we have deported them. We've got nothing out of them. Torture not only does not get useful information, torture very often gets you such bad information that you do stupid things like going to war based on it. Now, why would it be that these guys know nothing? Could it be that when bin Laden originally said that he didn't know the details of how 9/11 was going to be played out, he just supplied some funding to Sheikh Khalid Mohammed, who along with Abbas, pulled this thing together? Not the Abbas in Palestine. It's and Abba, Atta, Muhammad Atta, Atta, I'm sorry, Muhammad Atta. They pulled this thing together that what's happening here is not that you have this giant conspiracy that's from the top down, the way the Bush administration portrays it, with a mastermind in the cave, in the Bat Cave, right? Remember in Tora Bora, they told us that there were going to be, I saw these pictures in the newspaper, I'm sure you saw them, there will be caves with like 10 levels of depth and all these, you know, interior, all this stuff, and it's because, you know, Bin Laden's family was in the construction business, and you knew it. And they finally got in there. What did they find? They found empty caves that were like 5 feet deep that, like, you know, goats would hide out from the rain in. That's all they found. They found none of this. Well, The Power of Nightmares, this BBC special that talks about that questions the conventional wisdom of Al-Qaeda being a central all-knowing threat, is going to be rebroadcast on the BBC Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, the 18th, 19th, and 20th, tonight, tomorrow night, and the night after, on BBC Channel 2. And I want to share just a little information with you from that 20 minutes after the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that focused on your customers. Instead of sitting on hold, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This job is so much more than a half-hour newscast.
Brian Williams on the NBC Nightly News
Times. This is about our world, our children. This is about as high as the stakes
get. Ongoing engagements, firefighting.
Is my world safe? Is my nation safe? Is my family safe? That's our job. That's our duty. That's all that counts.
Reporting America's story. NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
My job is to tell the story of our lives.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 24 and one half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. TomHartman.com, the website. If you want to drop in, click the live chat button. It'll take you to our chat room. The Power of Nightmares, this is a BBC documentary that was put together by Adam Curtis. He's the producer of it. It ran on BBC in the last 3 weeks of October of last year, that is a few months ago, and created quite a stir in England, so much so some say that Tony Blair had to hop on a plane and come over here to talk with George W. Bush about it. And it is playing again tonight, tomorrow, and the day after on BBC. I don't know of any way that we in America can watch it. I'm sorry. There is a person on our chat, in our message boards, not in the chat room, but in our message boards, who has located, there are bootleg copies of it out on the internet, and who has located copies of it and is offering it to people or will point you to where you can get it or whatever, so where you can get a DVD of it. But you'd have to go to our message board for that information. I can't be promoting bootleg stuff here on the radio. So I'm not sure we can be doing it on our bulletin board, but it's there. Anyway, it is clear. It's very clear, says Adam Curtis, that in arguing that in his movie, he's arguing that there is a serious threat from radical Islamist terrorists. This is real. We saw it on 9/11. We saw it for months before that. And bin Laden represents a dimension of that. But he says the nightmare vision of it is an illusion. He says wherever one looks for this al-Qaeda organization, from the mountains of Afghanistan to the sleeper cells in America, the British and Americans are pursuing a fantasy. The bombs in Madrid and Bali show clearly the seriousness of the threat. But they are not evidence of a new and overwhelming threat unlike any we've ever experienced before. And above all, they do not, in the words of the British government, threaten the life of the nation. That is simply untrue. This is fascinating. I'm going to get into this in a little more detail. First, let's just go to the phones here for a moment. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Tom, Twin Cities, Minnesota, I'm assuming.
That's right, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Tom.
What's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment real quickly. At the beginning, you mentioned Louise's conversation with this conservative, and about the free market philosophy,
yeah,
and about digging a layer deeper. And you're right. Not only the conservatives, but also liberals are confused about the difference between democracy and capitalism.
Absolutely.
I mean, this guy's reaction when he was just shocked, he goes, well, everybody believes in the free market. And what he really meant was everybody believes in democracy. But they got this, the Limbaughs of the world have succeeded in merging these two concepts that people think, capitalism and democracy, same thing.
Yeah, well, it's not just the Limbaughs of the world. I mean, this really started with Ayn Rand. Well, I mean, you can trace it back to Edmund Burke and before that, if you want, back to the 1790s. But Ayn Rand really popularized this in the United States with their novel Atlas Shrugged, which kicked off the Objectivist movement. Alan Greenspan was initiated. The Objectivists, and we've had these folks from Ayn Rand on here, many times, they believe that democracy is a bad idea, that we should have just simply capitalism, that should be the form of government. In other words, government by corporations.
Exactly.
And
often, you know, you'll hear their mindset, the Republicans or conservatives will yell out, socialism, thinking like Sweden is socialist. And I mentioned this before, but really to drive the point home, they think that word socialism means dictatorship and the people are undemocratic.
Yeah.
Just because they regulate their capitalist free market system does not mean they're undemocratic.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that the word socialism has been tied to that by virtue of Marx's use of it and the Union of Soviets word. It's why I don't go there. I don't use socialist. From capitalism, absolutely. 29 minutes past the hour.
When you cross a ballerina with an insomniac, someone who'll dance the night away. And that's what they're doing at a dance-a-thon put together by dancers and their community coalition to raise money for kids' after-school programs. And what do you get when people bring their groups together? Healthier, drug-free communities, especially for kids. So if you're involved with a group, contact your community coalition at healthyourcommunity.org or 877-KIDS-313. Because you get more when you get together. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
A public defender has begun using Ohio's amendment that bans gay marriage to block prosecution of domestic abuse in unmarried heterosexual relationships. Passed in November, the Ohio amendment, in addition to banning gay marriage or civil unions, also prevents the state, counties, and cities from offering domestic partner benefits. However, the way the amendment is worded, it also bans creating or recognizing legal status for relationships of unmarried individuals that would give their relationship rights similar to marriage. On at least two occasions, the Cuyahoga County Public Defender's Office has argued that under the amendment, spousal abuse laws do not apply to unmarried couples. Lawyers told the Cleveland Plains Dealer they believe the amendment is a violation of the U.S. Constitution's 14th Amendment, which guarantees equal protection under the law.
St. Louis has become a hotbed of labor unrest lately. 1,700 nurses at St. John's Medical Center have been on strike for over a month with no new talks scheduled. Issues include the nurses having a voice in patient care. Nurses went on strike December 15th in St. Louis. They're still walking the picket lines, and they face many of the same issues there that nurses around the nation also face. St. Louis teachers, meanwhile, have set a strike date of Wednesday, January 19th. They're seeking pay parity with suburban St. Louis teachers. The teachers in the 32,000-student district rejected the St. Louis School District's final offer, and even though a teacher's strike in St. Louis would be illegal, the teachers' union there has authorized one anyway. The St. Louis Symphony Orchestra is also out in a labor dispute that has scrapped a scheduled concert this month featuring guest conductor Itzhak Perlman. The musicians have rejected a contract that includes a pay cut. On top of all that, Ford plans to close its Hazelwood plant in St. Louis, wiping out 2,700 jobs. That plant makes Explorers and Mercury Mountaineers.
To protest changes in patient and staffing ratios, nurses in California will be holding a funeral today in the state capitol. More than 1,500 members of the California Nurses Association are expected to attend. Prior to today's action, the association filed a lawsuit in Sacramento Superior Court against Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and the Department of Health. The suit says that the decision to roll back patient safety standards in California hospitals sets a dangerous precedent that threatens decades of health and safety protections for patients.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. FairJobs.org says over half the jobs that were created during the first Bush administration were agency, temp, and contingency jobs. The group says wages were stagnant for all sectors of the workforce. At least 5 million workers lost their health insurance, and outsourcing of jobs accelerated. FairJobs.org says efforts are underway to organize contingent workers, but many obstacles, including a Bush labor ruling that requires permission of temp agencies before workers can organize, stand in the way.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Our quote for the day from Thomas Jefferson. He said, I'm a great believer in luck, and I find the harder I work, the more I have of it. Thomas Jefferson, our quote for the day. Well said. Well, Tom, well said. No, I have not seen Tom House, Jefferson, today. No fresh tracks in the snow, although it's just incredibly cold here in the People's Republic of Vermont. So it probably he's a foot underground, well protected, and we haven't seen Cat George III either, this big bruiser feral cat who comes hanging around the house outside every now and then. So I don't see any fresh tracks in the snow. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Steve in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. How are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up, Steve?
Okay. Well, I enjoy listening to the other side as well, the conservative Republicans, just to kind of see what they're putting out there in terms of their propaganda, if you will. I was listening to Rush last week, and he was mentioning that he had heard Ted Kennedy at the press club, I believe it was.
Yeah.
And he did make a couple interesting points, and I just wanted to know what you thought of them.
Okay.
One was that he felt like after the election, a lot of the Democrats were, James Carville on TV, he was saying, well, we got our tails kicked. We got to change some things. We have to, reevaluate a lot of things. And he was saying how the Democrats since that time have kind of gone back to their old ways of thinking and not really looking at the past election as any type of mandate at all. And the other point was that he said Ted Kennedy mentioned also that during the elections or that we are that the majority of people, though we are the minority in Congress. And Rush made a point of saying, well, what did the election say? As to say that the Democrats did not do well in the past election, and that should tell us that the majority of Americans are not behind the Democrats and were in favor of Republican, strategies
yeah, here's,
for the next
here's,
4 years.
Here's the situation, Steve, and just very simply, I mean, just to lay it out, there is this love affair that Americans have with the word new. Back years ago when I used to work in the advertising business, if you could slap the word new on something, you could boost its sales. And so when Newt Gingrich, for example, or when Ronald Reagan, or for that matter, when Barry Goldwater rolled out the new conservative ideas, we're the people of bold vision, we have new ideas. They were simply the old ideas of Edmund Burke. I mean, back in 1790, they were the old ideas of empire. They were the old ideas that really went back all the way to Sumeria for 6,000 years. The old ideas of kingdom, of aristocracy, of plutocracy, of kleptocracy. Of the rich ruling the poor, basically.
Right.
And in fact, you look at Newt's Contract on America, and about 6 out of 10 points, when you actually read the thing, point to pieces of legislation that boil down to tax cuts for the rich. Right. That was the core of Newt's Contract on America.
Yeah.
And yet they presented it as new ideas. And so the Democrats have fallen into the same trap, and they're all running around going, we need some new ideas, we need some new ideas. I'll tell you, historically, with the exception of looking at the Republican Party, historically, with the exception of this brief window from the creation of the Republican Party in the 1850s, in Jackson, Michigan, in fact, through the election of Abraham Lincoln until just within probably a decade after the death of Lincoln, with the exception of that period when the Republican Party was actually the party of reform. It was in reaction to a Democratic Party that had become corrupt in the 1830s and 1840s, and the Whigs had collapsed for the Party of Reform then. But from the end of that period, which you could say probably started around 1870, 1872, from then until today, the Republican Party has been the party of wealth and power. It has been the party of the rich. And they've repackaged this a dozen different ways over the years and keep calling it new and improved. But it's still the same old story. It's always the same old story.
Yep.
And the Democratic Party started out as the party of the people. Thomas Jefferson saying, I look to the people, not the rich, for the salvation of this country, for the defense of this country, and so on. And became, for a while, the corrupt party of the wealthy and the powerful, and particularly the slaveholders, from, say, the 1830s through the 1860s, 1870s, 1880s, arguably even into the 1890s and 1890s and 1900, but the Democratic Party had become the corrupt party, and particularly in the South, and advocating slavery and whatnot. And that really, starting with FDR, the Democratic Party found its voice again and went back to its roots in Thomas Jefferson. It's ironic that Abraham Lincoln's favorite person to quote was Thomas Jefferson, because he was the party of reform and of the people, the Republican Party was, for that brief little window, that little 20-year period back in the 1600s, or the 1860s. The Democratic Party has historically been the party of we the people, of labor, of making sure that there is a middle class, of standing up for the little guy, of saying it's fine to have, you know, as Teddy Roosevelt, the Republican Roosevelt, said, it's fine to have business, but when big business becomes so big that it corrupts the corrupts government, then we the people have a problem. And the Democratic Party has lost its way. It lost its way big time with Bill Clinton and the Democratic Leadership Council. And my saying this on the radio, by the way, is something that you will not hear from some other liberal talk show hosts who are largely funded by the Democratic Party. You can tell I'm not getting any money from the Democratic Party.
Right.
You know, it's okay. No Armstrong Williams here. The Democrats lost their way with the DLC. I'm telling you, this is the thing. They thought they could become, they could put out the front of, we're the party of the people. We're going to stand up for the unions. We're going to stand up for working people. We're going to stand and talk that talk. But the walk that they walked was taking money from corporations and catering to some extent to corporate interests. And particularly, you know, Clinton with NAFTA and GATT and the Telecommunications Act of 1996. I mean, just these horrible cave-ins to multinational corporations.
Yeah, Ralph Nader pointed that out.
Yeah, absolutely. And as did Dennis Kucinich, as did many Democrats. Dennis Kucinich and Paul Wellstone talked about this all the time. But you know, there are good Democrats talking about this as well. And to this day, by the way. And so, in my opinion, what has to happen, and I don't know, maybe I'm agreeing or disagreeing with the Rush here, it doesn't really much matter what he thinks in my mind, but nonetheless, what has to happen, in my opinion, is for the Democratic Party to once again find its voice, to get its spine back. In fact, there's going to be a demonstration, I think it's the Progressive Democrats of America, are doing either the day of the inauguration or the day after, they're going to have a march in Washington where they're carrying a spine. Mm. And, you know, a 20-foot papier-mâché spine with the Bill of Rights, the Democratic Party platform, and they're adding to that platform verified voting, right? Let's get rid of the voting machines, you know, or clean them up. And they're going to be marching around Washington, D.C. with this Get a Spine Democrats thing. And this is where I think that Howard Dean and the liberal the part of the Democratic Party really reflects the historical roots of the Democratic Party. And it's not that the Democratic Party has to have new ideas. What they needed to go back to is the old traditional ideas of a party that represents the people. They need to package it in a new way because the times have changed. There are different issues today than there were 60 years ago. Franklin Roosevelt wasn't dealing with the fact that half his economy had been exported to China. He was dealing with a very different kind of economic crisis.
You're absolutely right. Presentation is everything.
Well, yeah, presentation and content as well.
Right.
I mean, you know, content.
Yeah.
But the core values have to be the same. And this is where the Democratic Party has lost it, in my opinion, I don't just want to lay the whole thing on Clinton and say it, you know, since 92, I'd say since the late 80s, basically, you know, when the Democrats looked at the success of Reagan and said, you know, Reagan came in with all this corporate money and was able to kick our butts, even though he represented the views of a minority of Americans, and the conservatives still do. Only a small minority of Americans, actually, if you go through the issues one by one, believe, you know, agree with the Republican point of view. And the vast majority of Americans agree with, by and large, what have historically been the Democratic views. But these just need to be communicated. So anyhow, that's my take on that. Steve, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
To hear from you. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you calling in. 17 minutes before the hours of Tom Hartman program. The Power of Nightmares Reawakened. Adam Curtis did this Q&A on the BBC website. You can find this thing. There's a link to it. Again, you'll find it off our message board, because it's one of these incredibly long URLs that there's no way I could read it on the air. But probably if you just go to bbc.co.uk, there you'll find some link to it, since it's playing tonight, tomorrow, and the night after. And there's this, or you could Google Power of Nightmares Re-Awakened, and you'll find it, by Adam Curtis, C-U-R-T-I-S. And it's a question and answer. And some fascinating studies. It's a question. Okay, so Al-Qaeda does not exist as a highly organized and structured group, but it is a terrifically powerful ideology, which makes it even more dangerous? No, says Adam Curtis. The extreme Islamist ideas are dangerous, as Madrid, Bali, and the and 11 September showed. But to portray them as a terrifying new viral form of terrorism is also part of the politics of fear. If one looks at the history of the Islamist movement and its ideas, it's clear that its high point actually came in the late 1980s, when it seemed on the verge of success across the Muslim world. But then in the 1990s, Islamism failed dramatically in its attempt to create revolutions. And basically, I would say that the only success they had was in Iran, and now that's falling apart. Because the ideas failed to inspire the masses, they did not appeal to the majority of people. Curtis goes on to say the attacks on 9/11 were not the expression of a confident and growing movement. They were the acts of desperation by a small group frustrated by their failure, which they blamed on the power of America. It's also important to realize that many within the Islamist movement were against this strategy. I thought that was really interesting. One of the other questions that was asked, about 9/11 and our reaction to it, all this kind of thing. Are you saying it's a conspiracy? And he says, no, the use of fear in contemporary politics, that is Bush part of a conspiracy to scare us around 9/11, to terrify us about 9/11? And he says, no, Bush and Blair. No, the use of fear in contemporary politics is not the result of conspiracy. Politicians have stumbled on it in a populist consumerist age where they found their authority and legitimacy declining dramatically. They simply discovered that a war on terror, which, by the way, I would add, is a phrase that was first used by Ronald Reagan. Many people don't remember that. He called it a war on terrorism. We were waging it in Latin America, in Nicaragua, in El Salvador, where we were supporting death squads. Remember that? Turned out real well. Lots of, tens of thousands of people dead, and our reputation shredded in the region. Colombia is still having essentially a civil war. I have been in many of these countries. I'll tell you, it is not, things are not, in any case, I digress. Adam Curtis says, in a populist consumerist age where they found, they being Bush and Blair, found their authority and legitimacy declining dramatically, they have simply discovered in the, quote, war on terror, end quote, a way of restoring their authority by promising to protect us from something that only they can see. He says, I don't think it'll last. Already, senior parts of the establishment are beginning to question the very basis of the politician's argument. That basis being that Al-Qaeda is a threat like no other, which threatens the life of the nation. And in fact, quite specifically, the equivalent of the Supreme Court in the United Kingdom, I believe, it's called the Law Lords, the Venerable Law Lords. It may not be the same as the Supreme Court. Frankly, not that familiar with the British judicial system. I thought their equivalent of the Supreme Court was called the High Court, but I may be wrong. In any case, the Law Lords just, here's what Lord Hoffman said. They just struck down an attempt by Tony Blair to push through something like the Patriot Act here in the United States that said that he could detain people indefinitely simply because he said so. This extremely unconstitutional practice that George W. Bush, Condi Rice, Alberto Gonzalez have engaged in, which is why I think that every single Democrat in the House and in the Senate should be voting against Gonzalez and against Rice. If every Republican could vote against Bill Clinton's economic policy that then brought peace and prosperity to America, not one single Republican voted for Bill Clinton's tax increases that gave us 8 years of prosperity. Not one. If that can happen, then every Democrat can vote against a phony war on terror, against using torture as a means of governance, against the loss of our civil liberties, the Patriot Act, against the doctrine that the president is above the Constitution. The Constitution explicitly says only Congress has the right to make war. Only Congress has the right to suspend habeas corpus. In other words, to suspend the right of people to be held without being charged by a crime. Congress has not authorized either of those things. In any case, Lord Hoffman says in Britain, and I quote, the real threat to the life of the nation comes not from terrorism, but from laws such as these. That is the true measure of what terrorism may achieve. It is for Parliament to decide whether to give the terrorists such a victory. In other words, if Parliament passes laws that rip the guts out of human and civil rights in England, as we did in the United States with the Patriot Act, which was printed at 3 o'clock in the morning, and the vote was held at 10 o'clock the following morning. What is that, 7 hours later? 350 some odd page piece of legislation? And it was not, by the way, the Patriot Act was not the piece of legislation that the House and Senate Judiciary Committees had been looking at just a week earlier and had, with bipartisan support, said that they supported. Instead, there was this anthrax attack, and suddenly the head of the Judiciary Committee, Pat Leahy, couldn't even go into his office. And in the middle of the night before the vote, a different law was substituted by the Bush administration. And a vote was held at 10 o'clock the next morning. That's how we got the Patriot Act. And Lord Hoffman, the head of the Law Lords, says in England, if the Parliament does the same thing, then the terrorists have received a victory. The real threat, Jim Hoag suggests, the real threat to your freedom comes not from terrorism, but from oppressive laws. Amen. It's the Tom Hartman Show, 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is E-C-O-W-I-N-E. Au revoir.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1790, populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the Southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
With a Workers Independent News feature story, I'm Jesse Russell. Union members for bus companies in Queens and Brooklyn have been on strike for more than a week. On Friday, talks between the city and the Amalgamated Transit Union collapsed, leaving no relief in sight for 70,000 daily bus riders. WIN correspondent Sarah Turner reports from New York City.
I have to go all the way to Manhattan to work, so I have to take this bus to the subway.
One local Queens resident expresses the concerns many riders are experiencing as the strike enters its second week. Union members for Command Bus Company and Green Bus Lines have been on strike since January 9th. Sal Baragaglia is president of ATU Local 1181. He says talks center around better health care and benefits. He spoke after negotiations broke down.
Go on until they come back to the table what they promised.
The mayor says the existing bus franchise system is not working and is in negotiations with the bus line owners to buy their companies and transfer them to MTA. Union leaders are angry the mayor won't discuss retroactive pay increases for the 2 years workers have been without a contract.
They pulled the wage package off the table on a promise if and when the MTA eventually does take over, they will address our wage issues. 2 weeks ago, those wage issues were on the table, and now they're off.
John Longo is president of ATU Local 1179. Mayor Bloomberg responded from City Hall.
The city has done everything in its power to settle this dispute and get the buses rolling. The offer we made is simply the best the city can possibly do.
No new negotiations are scheduled, and riders, for the time being, will have to find another way to work. For WIN, I'm Sarah Turner in New York City.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
What a wonderful, wonderful world this would be. What a wonderful, 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 wonderful world.
Yeah, if only we woke up. Well, we can get there. We can get there. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 4.5 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, John in Shreveport, Louisiana on the line. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
I got a quick question. I need your opinion on something.
Yes, sir.
Two questions, really. One, do you think the Pledge of Allegiance should be recited in public schools?
I don't think that that's an important issue, frankly.
Well, I'd like your opinion on it.
Well, do you think that 45 million people should be without health insurance?
I didn't ask about health insurance.
Which do you think
care
is the
to answer the question?
Frankly, I don't have an opinion on it. I don't.
Okay, then I don't.
I don't.
Okay,
I don't
so
consider
I
it an important issue.
Okay.
John. Okay. So you can always tell. I'm going to set you up for should there be a Pledge of Allegiance recited in public schools? I don't care. Frankly, I really don't. When I went through school in the 50s, in elementary school, we recited the pledge every day. I don't feel injured by it. I don't feel that it's essential, but I don't think I was injured by it. It's not a big deal. I think there are some real issues in America, however. But the conservatives really don't want us talking about the real issues, about whether or not there are people without health care, for example, in the United States, about whether or not Social Security is going to actually be there for us. Yes, it is, by the way. Unless Bush gets his hands on it and hands it over to his buddies on Wall Street. You want to talk about unfunded mandates. Look at Medicare. I mean, the Medicare situation, now that they have given this huge giveaway to the drug companies and the health insurance companies, saying that the government negotiate drug prices. Drug prices always have to be top retail price if it goes through Medicare, which is one of the largest purchasers of drugs in the United States and set to be. I mean, the deficit that Medicare is running and will run over the next 20 years is going to make Social Security look like a dwarf, like the nothing there. There's no there there. And, there are some really serious issues we need to address. And then people, do you think gays should be allowed to marry? Well, do you think that people should pledge allegiance in the school? Come on. Who cares? Gay marriage. I live here in Vermont. 8 years ago, we allowed gays to have civil union. I haven't noticed any difference whatever you call it, community. It's my wife hasn't left me. Come on. There are real issues in America, friends. Oh, my. This is the Tom Hartman radio program. News without conflicts of global corporate interest.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
A public defender has begun using Ohio's amendment that bans gay marriage to block prosecution of domestic abuse in unmarried heterosexual relationships. Passed in November, the Ohio amendment, in addition to banning gay marriage or civil unions, also prevents the state, counties, and cities from offering domestic partner benefits. However, the way the amendment is worded, it also bans creating or recognizing legal status for relationships of unmarried individuals that would give their relationship rights similar to marriage. On at least two occasions, the Cuyahoga County Public Defender's Office has argued that under the amendment, spousal abuse laws do not apply to unmarried couples. Lawyers Taylor, they believe the amendment is a violation of the law.
St. Louis has become a hotbed of arrest lately. 1,700 nurses at St. John's Medical Center have been on strike for over a month with no new talks scheduled. Issues include the nurses having a voice in patient care. Nurses went on strike December 15th in St. Louis. They're still walking the picket lines, and they face many of the same issues there that nurses around the nation also face. St. Louis teachers, meanwhile, have set a strike date of Wednesday, January 19th. They're seeking pay parity with suburban St. Louis teachers. The teachers in the 32,000-student district rejected the St. Louis School District's final offer, and even though a teacher's strike in St. Louis would be illegal, the teachers' union there has authorized one anyway. The St. Louis Symphony Orchestra is also out in a labor dispute that has scrapped a scheduled concert this month featuring guest conductor Itzhak Perlman. The musicians have rejected a contract that includes a pay cut. On top of all that, Ford plans to close its Hazelwood plant in St. Louis, wiping out 2,700 jobs. That plant makes Explorers and Mercury Mountaineers.
To protest changes in patient and staffing ratios, nurses in California will be holding a funeral today in the state capitol. More than 1,500 members of the California Nurses Association are expected to attend. Prior to today's action, the association filed a lawsuit in Sacramento Superior Court against Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and the Department of Health. The suit says that the decision to roll back patient safety standards in California hospitals sets a dangerous precedent that threatens decades of health and safety protections for patients.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. FairJobs.org says over half the jobs that were created during the first Bush administration were agency temp and contingency jobs. The group says wages were stagnant for all sectors of the workforce. At least 5 million workers lost their health insurance, and outsourcing of jobs accelerated. FairJobs.org says efforts are underway to organize contingent workers, but many obstacles, including a Bush labor ruling that requires permission of temp agencies before workers can organize, stand in the way.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
George W. running around the country on his little stick horse, pretending to be a reformer, if it was not so sad, so wrong. His latest war whoop is that, by gollies, he wants to reform the so-called tort laws so HMOs, hospitals, doctors, and drug companies can't be driven out of business by us patients who sue them when their practices harm us. Bush's handler sent him to Collinsville, Illinois, just outside of St. Louis, where he held a photo op and labeled both St. Clair and Madison counties as, quote, judicial hell holes. He noted the 720 malpractice and wrongful death suits have been filed there against area practitioners in the past 7 years, with jury awards causing enormous economic damage to them and curtailing health care in the area. The issue of tort law has long been the prerogative of state governments, but George says it now must be federalized because, he says, that, quote, junk lawsuits are proliferating all over. Juries, he wailed, are handing out such massive judgments to patients who sue that entire hospitals, groups of doctors, and other medical businesses are shutting down. Problem is, it just ain't so. The watchdog found that of the 720 cases that George cited, only 14 resulted in jury verdicts, and only 7 of those verdicts sided with the patients. Excuse me, but 7 verdicts in 7 years is hardly a federal crisis. Moreover, Bush's proposed remedy is to cap pain and suffering damages at $250,000 per case. Yet in the 2 counties cited by George as judicial hellholes, only 1 case, 1, resulted in a jury award that exceeded this cap. Again, this is hardly a runaway system requiring federal intervention. This is Jim Hightower saying, to put some truth on Bush's lies about junk lawsuits and to help defend your legal rights, call Public Citizen, 202-588-7741.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, tomhartman.com, the website. Good to have you back. I received an email this morning from a friend of mine who lives in New Mexico. Michael Hutchison. He's an author. He wrote a number of books. His most famous book was called Mega Brain, about how to make your brain work better, I guess you could say. He used to publish a newsletter about it. And I've known Michael for, boy, a long time. I don't know, at least a decade. We've written blurbs for each other's books. And some years ago, 5-6 years ago, as I recall, Michael broke his neck. And he is more or less paralyzed from the neck down. And he sent me a note this morning saying that he's got a computer now, finally. It took several years to get it. Because Michael, when you make your living as a writer and you can't write anymore, you don't have much income. And Michael is living on Social Security. That's it. Social Security disability benefits. That's 100% of his income. And he sent me this note saying, looks like George has some plans for my income, and I'm a little concerned about this. And sure enough, here this article in the Associated Press by Lee Strope, today's paper, Social Security changes could affect disabled. Social Security disability benefits, reads the article. Social Security disability benefits might not be safe from the across-the-board cuts that are likely in President Bush's proposal to allow personal investment accounts. Retirement and disability benefits are calculated using the same formula. So if future promised retirement benefits are cut, then disability benefits also would be reduced unless the program is somehow separated. That raises questions about how investment accounts would be structured for disabled people, especially if they're injured at a young age or are dependent on a parent. Disabled beneficiaries typically work less and need benefits sooner, so the accounts would not provide enough income for these people. They point out that about 16% of the 47 million Americans who are currently receiving Social Security are not retired persons, but are disabled persons. My recollection, actually, is that it was closer to 30%, almost a third, 32% are a combination of disabled persons and not retired persons, but the people who are getting the benefits of, in other words, somebody who, for example, my mother-in-law received Social Security. Her husband died. My wife's father died of a heart attack some years ago, and so her mother had not worked. She had been a homemaker, and so she gets her husband's Social Security benefits. So that's not a retired worker, right? And so when you add up folks like that plus people like Michael, it's almost a third of all the people getting Social Security benefits. So it is not, in fact, a retirement program for retired workers. And then this article points out almost 3 in 10 of today's 20-year-olds will become disabled before reaching the age of 67. That's a sobering thought. About a third. About 72% of the private sector workforce has no long-term disability insurance. Advocates worry that some of the nation's most vulnerable and needy people will be hurt by Bush's plan to remake Social Security. Well, gee, would that be something new and different? Somehow I think not. I mean, something new for the Bush administration, hurting the weakest and most vulnerable among us. Yes. This is similar. I received an email. In fact, let me find it here. This article in the Washington Post, writes Shireen in Baltimore. This article in the Washington Post made me cry. She said, when the feelings of anger and helplessness get too much to bear, it is so easy to just turn away and stop paying attention. I don't know how much more of this I can take. Any suggestions for coping mechanisms? Now, what was the article? Here's the article. It's by Jim Vanderhee and Michael A. Fletcher in the Washington Post. The headline, Bush says election ratified Iraq policy. President Bush says the public's decision to reelect him was a ratification of his approach toward Iraq, and there is therefore no reason to hold any administration officials accountable for mistakes or misjudgments in pre-war planning or managing the violent aftermath. Get that? I mean, this was what he called, and in answer, by the way, to Shireen, in answer to your question about what you can do, how to cope with this, get active. Redirect your energy into activism at the local level. Join TrueMajority.org. Join DemocracyForAmerica.com. Go to the Democracy for America meetups. Join the local Democratic Party. Join the local Green Party. Join the local Republican Party. Get active. Get involved. That's how you deal with it. You redirect your anger, your frustration, your concern, your despair, your whatever it may be, you redirect that into action, and it will be transformed. But in any case, the point that she makes is that George Bush had, as Paul Krugman points out in his op-ed in today's New York Times, George Bush had his accountability moment. He says it was the election when he was held accountable for Iraq. And he says, therefore, the accountability is all over. There's no reason to hold anybody accountable. Because the voters have said, hey, you know, George, we hold you accountable and it's just fine with us what you did. The only problem with that, Krugman points out so eloquently and so articulately, is that Bush did not level with the voters during the campaign. And therefore, says Paul Krugman, in today's New York Times does not deserve anyone's future trust. Without exactly lying, the Bush administration managed to keep the voters confused. We're going to get into the mechanism of how they did that at the bottom of the hour, by the way. According to a Pew poll, as Krugman says, according to a Pew poll on the evening of the election, the great majority of voters of both parties believed that the Bush administration had asserted that it found weapons of mass destruction or an active WMD program in Iraq. Mr. Bush also systematically misrepresented how the war was going. That's a nice way of saying lied about. Remember last September, Alawi came to Washington? And he gives us glowing, everything is fine, don't worry, be happy. He was rehearsed, and his speeches were written by the Bush campaign folks. He declared that 14 or 15 of Iraq's 18 provinces were completely safe, and that he had trained 100,000 troops. None of it was true. None of it was true. George Bush and his administration have been consistently lying to us. You saw that interview with him with the CNN guy last night. It was an NBC guy. It was played on MS. It must be an NBC guy because it was played on MSNBC. And George W. Bush just lying through his teeth. It was just incredible. I mean, it was breathtaking to watch it. Well, everybody in Europe thought he had weapons of mass destruction. No. Very few people in Europe thought he had weapons of mass destruction. That's why they didn't vote to go into the war. That's why they didn't send troops. They listened to Hans Blix, who was saying, there's nothing here. It's just breathtaking. The lies that they have told and the lies that they are continuing to tell. And now, they sold us this war in Iraq with a campaign. It was a marketing campaign. The Democrat Woodrow Wilson first started this back in 1917, 1918, marketing wars to the American people. In fact, many people in the advertising industry, you read the literature in the ad industry, in the ad business, view this as the beginning of the modern advertising and public relations industry. It was when Woodrow Wilson decided to use advertising to sell a war to the American people. World War I, to get us into the war. And there was an active effort to do that. And it was not one of the bright moments of advertising, by the way. It's not, you know, people look back on it and say, boy, did we really do this? Well, the Bush administration did this with the war in Iraq. They marketed this war to us. And now they're marketing Social Security, so-called reform, privatization. $200 billion down the tubes in Iraq. So far, with more to come, at least $100 billion, probably $200-400 billion more to come. Mind-boggling amounts of money. And trillions going to Wall Street brokers and brokerage houses and banking firms if Bush is successful in privatizing Social Security. Trillions. And what's he going to do? He's going to borrow it from our children and grandchildren while assuring them that by borrowing this money, he's helping them. I mean, this is just like numbingly mind-boggling. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Tim in Illinois is on the line. Hey, Tim, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for the daily dose of sanity.
You're welcome.
Just wanted to give everybody a little update on the only senator with a spine.
Barbara Boxer?
Barbara Boxer went toe-to-toe. In your face this morning against Condoleezza Rice and pointed out numerous contradictions, not only that Rice has made of her own words, but contradictions with George Bush, and pointing out lots of things that Condoleezza Rice should be held accountable for. And, of course, Condi, in rebuttal to this, whined about Barbara Boxer impugning her integrity and credibility.
Yeah, we have Condi Rice, who has no credibility or integrity, in my opinion, and I'll just say that. And I'm not calling names. I'll give you, you know, chapter and verse. Although I suspect Barbara Boxer did.
Absolutely. I mean, she just, her response back to Condi was, "Hey, these are your words.
Yeah.
These are your words. I'm showing you the things that you said to the American people and that you said to Congress. Yeah. These are your words. And Condi again had another session there where another opportunity to whine the same thing. Well, you're making this personal. Quit impugning my integrity and my credibility. I have not compromised my focus on the truth.
Yeah, right.
So anyway, now that was the morning round, and now in the afternoon round, after lunch, Barbara Boxer will again address, will have specific questions. This morning it was just setting out an overview.
An opening statement, yeah.
Well, actually, John Kerry had some biting comments and questions, and so did Russ Feingold. But Condi danced all around those, never answered the question.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I look forward to watching the replay on C-SPAN
tonight.
Yeah, now
anybody who wants to see some highlights, surely Boxer's highlights, will be on C-SPAN at 7 p.m. Eastern.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Tom.
Tim, thank you very much for the call. Good to hear from you, and thanks for the update. I appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, Truth in Broadcasting, the pill that will help you escape the matrix.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is Vasilnik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
This job is so much more than a half-hour newscast.
Brian Williams on the NBC Nightly News.
These are very serious times. This is about our world, our children. This is about as high as the stakes
get. Ongoing engagements, firefighting.
Is my world safe? Is my nation safe? Is my family safe? That's our job. That's our duty. That's all that counts.
Reporting America's story. NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
My job is to tell the story of our lives.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartman program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartman.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palisex books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I left my conscience like a crying child. Locked the doors behind me, put the pain on fire.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number at the bottom of the hour. We're going to have our Tools for Activism class. But right now it's time for our daily report from Washington, D.C. Alan Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Alan.
Well, hi. I'm here at Radio Row at the inauguration. But I don't know whether to give you bad news or bad news. Interesting news, I guess I'll start out with first. And that is apparently our friend Ralph Reed. Remember him from the Christian Coalition?
Oh, yeah.
He is planning to run for lieutenant governor of Georgia because his friends are saying that his ultimate ambition is 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Interesting. I wonder if he's going to be taking more money from the Reverend Moon to do it.
Is that unbelievable?
Yeah. It's, you know, it might fly in Georgia, but... particularly since they still have voting machines down there that have no paper trail.
Well, most places don't have a paper trail.
Yeah.
A couple other things. One is that in terms of the Democratic race, both Dean and Martin Frost say that the DNC race is between them. One of the 400-some people that get to vote said to me that he met with Frost and could not believe how dull the guy was.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think Howard Dean has a chance of taking this thing, and I think it would be the best thing that could happen to the Democratic Party for them to get their spine back. For them to did you catch any of Barbara Boxer's grilling of?
I did not because we've been here at Radio Row, but yeah. I hear she was quite good.
Yeah, I've been on the air for the last hour and a half, but Tim in Illinois called in about 10 minutes ago and said that she just ripped Condi up one side and down the other, and in her own words, in other words, she just took all of Condoleezza Rice's statements that were lies, distortions, half-truths, or, you know, obvious and intended to confuse or muddy the situation, threw them at her, and Condi Rice's response was that, oh, you're trying to impugn my integrity. Remarkable. So, anyhow, I guess there's a little bit of good news for you, Ellen. So what's the, you said you have bad news and worse news. What's the worst news?
the bad news is... the Supreme Court came out with two decisions today, which I think are of question. One is it said it would not intervene in the dispute over the Bush administration's plan to conduct the military trials for Osama bin Laden's former driver and other terrorist suspects. This is essentially the Guantanamo case. They basically, Paul Clement, who talked before the court, said that he believed that basically the trials were the exercise of the president's job as commander-in-chief.
Well, that's interesting.
So that's the first thing. The second thing is that the Supreme Court said that the blood alcohol test does not violate the Fourth Amendment. They said that this was from Wisconsin, that a forced blood alcohol test would not violate a driver's Fourth Amendment protection.
In other words, they can stick a needle in your arm without your permission or consent.
That's right.
Why would they need to do that when there is a breath alcohol test that's less invasive?
I guess sometimes either they don't have it. I don't know. I didn't see the whole decision, but it's Faust, F-A-U-S-T versus Wisconsin.
Yeah, these are both decisions that I suspect that there are levels or layers of subtlety to them that are probably worth peeling back and exploring, particularly the one with the military tribunals. I mean, on its face, yes, Bush is the commander in chief. There's a larger issue, and that is whether these people should be subject to military tribunals at all.
Right.
And it sounds like they just didn't even address that they simply took the smaller
it's pretty amazing
smaller piece of it. Yeah. This is how's your brother's lawsuit going, by the way?
Well, you mean the one against Khaki International?
Yeah. Well, I thought he had one against Bush. They were filing in Germany.
Yeah, I mean,
we've got
several,
about 20 seconds, by the way.
I think it's wending its way through, but he also has a suit directly against Khaki International for the Abu Ghraib stuff.
Oh, the corporation that was that ran the private security.
Exactly.
Oh, interesting. Well, keep us up to date on that, will you?
Okay, we'll do.
Great. Thank you, Ellen. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service from Washington, D.C. It's 29 minutes past the hour. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. Yeah, that's me. We'll be right back.
Mom, I can't believe you asked Rick all those questions. Where do you live? And who are your parents? It's so embarrassing.
Getting to know your kid's friends isn't easy. But if you don't, he's more likely to do drugs.
Geez, do you have to know everything?
Actually, Sean, I do. Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
A public defender has begun using Ohio's amendment that bans gay marriage to block prosecution of domestic abuse in unmarried heterosexual relationships. Passed in November, the Ohio amendment, in addition to banning gay marriage or civil unions, also prevents the state, counties, and cities from offering domestic partner benefits. However, the way the amendment is worded, it also bans creating or recognizing legal status for relationships of unmarried individuals that would give their relationship rights similar to marriage. On at least two occasions, the Cuyahoga County Public Defender's Office has argued that under the amendment, spousal abuse laws do not apply to unmarried couples. Lawyers told the Cleveland Plains Dealer they believe the amendment is a violation of the U.S. Constitution's 14th Amendment, which guarantees equal protection under the law.
St. Louis has become a hotbed of labor unrest lately. 1,700 nurses at St. John's Medical Center have been on strike for over a month with no new talks scheduled. Issues include the nurses having a voice in patient care. Nurses went on strike December 15th in St. Louis. They're still walking the picket lines, and they face many of the same issues there that nurses around the nation also face. St. Louis teachers, meanwhile, have set a strike date of Wednesday, January 19th. They're seeking pay parity with suburban St. Louis teachers. The teachers in the 32,000-student district rejected the St. Louis School District's final offer, and even though a teacher's strike in St. Louis would be illegal, the teachers' union there has authorized one anyway. The St. Louis Symphony Orchestra is also out in a labor dispute that has scrapped a scheduled concert this month featuring guest conductor Itzhak Perlman. The musicians have rejected a contract that includes a pay cut. On top of all that, Ford plans to close its Hazelwood plant in St. Louis, wiping out 2,700 jobs. That plant makes Explorers and Mercury Mountaineers.
To protest changes in patient and staffing ratios, nurses in California will be holding a funeral today in the state capitol. More than 1,500 members of the California Nurses Association are expected to attend. Prior to today's action, the association filed a lawsuit in Sacramento Superior Court against Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and the Department of Health. The suit says that the decision to roll back patient safety standards in California hospitals sets a dangerous precedent that threatens decades of health and safety protections for patients.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. FairJobs.org says over half the jobs that were created during the first Bush administration were agency, temp, and contingency jobs. The group says wages were stagnant for all sectors of the workforce. At least 5 million workers lost their health insurance, and outsourcing of jobs accelerated. FairJobs.org says efforts are underway to organize contingent workers, but many obstacles, including a Bush labor ruling that requires permission of temp agencies before workers can organize, stand in the way.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, it's tit for tat, but heck, you know all that. So when George number one brought in the big guns and chased me out of Kuwait, tried to set me straight, I arranged a little hit on that Texas twit. Well, it didn't quite work.
No, it didn't quite work. This is the Osama song. I'm not sure that's the best bumper music. 27 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. As Jim Turr from BlueCanyonProductions.com, BlueCanyonSatire.com. Great website. Some marvelous satire pieces there. Our tools for activism. It's Tuesday afternoon, second half of the second hour of our 3-hour program, and our tools for activism course is traditionally at this moment. So I want to just share with you a concept that everybody understands intuitively, and yet most people have never really thought about, you know, at the level of intellect, at the level of mind. And that is that we are all made up of multiple persons. Right? There is not simply a me. There are multiple me's. Now, you say, wait a minute, I thought that was multiple personality disorder. No, multiple personality disorder is when the different parts of a person, when one of those different parts takes the center stage and causes amnesia about all the other parts or disconnects from all the other parts. And then another part takes center stage and causes amnesia from all the other parts. But normally we are multiplex. There's not a good word for it. We are complex, comprehensive persons. For example, I am a father. I am one person to my children. I'm a son. I'm somebody else to my mother and father. I'm a husband. I'm somebody else to my wife. I'm a friend. I have friends. I'm a competitor in the world of business. I am a partner. I've had business partners. I'm a partner with my wife, actually, in this business. I'm a performer right now and when I give speeches and things. And I have the capability of being a variety of things, loving, vengeful, righteous, compassionate. I mean, there's all these different aspects to all of us. And when we assume these roles with others, there are different skill sets that come along with them. It's not just a role. It's not just a matter of putting on masks, as it were, or acting out roles. It really is a matter of historic pieces of us coming to the fore. We can be wounded by some people. We can't with certain words that other people, if they said those words, wouldn't wound us at all, because of the nature of our relationship with those people and that part of us that is talking to them. Now, this in and of itself is a huge piece of neurolinguistic programming, NLP, and there's a whole book about this called Core Transformation if you really want to get into this stuff. I'm not going to go that deep into it right now in this, because that gets into the kind of therapy side of it, but I want to talk about the political part of this. Each part of us brings the resources along with it that it has the best access to. So the self-righteous part has certain resources. The compassionate part has certain resources. The intellectual part has certain resources. Different parts of us have different resources. And in politics, if you are a politician or a political party, and you want to talk to individuals, particularly to mass, large number of individuals, it's best to talk to a particular part of people. There are some parts that we all have in common, or that most of us have in common. Those few among us who don't have some of those parts are generally referred to as sociopaths. But there are many parts that we all have in common. We all have the ability to empathize. We all have the ability to experience what it might be like to be another person to a certain extent. To feel compassion, to feel love in the sense, you know, the Greeks had all these different words for, you know, eros and agape and so on, different words for love. We only have the one word in English, unfortunately. But to feel what we used to call brotherly love, to feel love for another person in the context of caring, consideration. And so in politics, when you want to talk to a person or to a group of people, if you identify the part that you're speaking to and you identify the message that you're delivering and make them congruent, then your message will have much more impact. In the last election, George Bush consistently did this. He was very good at it. And he mostly only talked to a few parts. In fact, Mark Crispin Miller, who is one of the most brilliant minds of our day, wrote an extraordinary book called The Bush Dyslexicon. And Mark was on this program. I interviewed him a year or so ago. And we correspond from time to time. And Mark pointed out in that book, and I, as I recall, he pointed out on this radio program, that these were the parts of George Bush that are really the most powerful parts. That Bush does not fumble sentences, does not screw up, you know, syntax, does not garble, does not make, is not inarticulate when he's speaking from his vengeful part, from his angry part, from his revenge part. When he's talking about vengeance, he is very articulate. But when he tries to speak from his compassionate part or from his understanding part, then it starts to fall apart. And Miller suggests that that means that those parts don't have relative equality within Bush as a personality. But, you know, whether or not that's the case, and I agree that it probably is, but setting that aside for the moment, what George Bush did throughout the campaign was he talked mostly to the vengeful or fearful parts of us. Now, you could argue that the reason for this is that there's a huge vengeful and fearful part of George. And in fact, those are the parts that dominate his personality. Maybe. There's also a frat boy part of him. The drunken frat boy part. The part who makes jokes, particularly at the expense of others. The rich drunken frat boy part. And really, those are the three parts that we see the most of George Bush in public. And he speaks to those parts in other people. And I think it's, for example, here is George W. Bush on the campaign trail speaking to the drunk frat boy part in his audience, as it were.
He even used the same words Howard Dean did. Back when he supposedly disagreed with him. No matter how many times Senator Kerry flip-flops.
Yeah, there you go. It's that kind of subtle sarcasm. So you want your message to be congruent with the part that you're communicating it to. Okay. Now, Martin Luther King, who we talked about extensively yesterday, and Jesus, and many other moral leaders, talked to our compassionate part and the parts of us that seek justice. Not revenge, but justice. And did so brilliantly. And you know, I played some clips yesterday of Martin Luther King. We don't need to revisit those. Unfortunately, John Kerry did not do this in the last election. His messages were a little more confused. John Edwards, however, did. This is a fascinating thing, how the message and the part that they were speaking to was consistently congruent. So what a politician needs to do, what a political party needs to do, my advice to the Democratic Party, the Republicans already understand this stuff. They've got NLP practitioners, folks like Frank Luntz and whatnot, consulting with them and Newt Gingrich, have for decades now. They've been using this stuff since Ronald Reagan. These tools for communication. My advice to the Democrats, the Greens, is call out the part of people to whom you want to speak. Like, for example, JFK did with our hopeful parts, while Nixon was calling out our fearful parts. Fearful of the Cold War, fearful of the communists, and JFK was calling out our positive parts. Call out the part you want to speak to. Let's first just, you know, get a couple other clips from this last election. Just notice this here.
Of all the wrong choices that President Bush has made, The most catastrophic choice is the mess that he has made in Iraq.
Now, see, without defining a part, without defining a message, that was really just the intellectual part. Intellectual part doesn't have the juice and the resources of the other parts.
It's absolutely essential.
Now, this is Dick Cheney, and he's speaking to the fearful part.
That 8 weeks from today, on November 2nd, we make the right choice. Because if we make the wrong choice, then the danger is that we'll get hit again, that we'll be hit in a way that will be devastating from the standpoint of the United States.
And perhaps we made the wrong choice, assuming that that choice was actually made. That's a whole other discussion. And then here's John Edwards responding to Dick Cheney's calling out the fearful part by saying, you know, you shouldn't be calling out the fearful part. This is the part seeking justice, I would say.
What he said to the American people was, if you go to the polls in November and elect anyone other than us, then and another terrorist attack occurs, it's your fault. This is un-American.
This is un-American, the part seeking justice. So the message, the tonality, the inflection, the delivery was consistent with the message. Consider Winston Churchill. This is May 19th, 1940. England is being bombed. Churchill has just been inaugurated as prime minister. This is his first speech after Chamberlain had resigned. Winston Churchill speaking to the British people. And notice he is, of course, the British people are all living in this part of fear. And Churchill is going to speak to this part and then draw from them, draw into them, the part that says, no, righteous, the righteous part. And there's absolute consistency between his tonality and his message.
Side by side, the British and French peoples have advanced to rescue not only Europe, but mankind from the foulest and most soul-destroying tyranny which has ever darkened and stained the pages of history. Behind them, behind us, behind the armies and troops of Britain and France, gather a group of shattered states and bludgeoned great races, the Czechs, the Poles, the Norwegians, the Danes, the Dutch, the Belgians, upon all of whom the long night of barbarism will descend, unbroken even by a star of hope, unless we conquer. As conquer we must, as conquer we shall.
So there you go, speaking to the part of, you know, taking fear and converting it into power, into energy. Now, here's the flip side of that. This is George Bush from the last campaign, or not from the last campaign, from his speech prior to the invasion of Iraq. This was the speech that he gave where he said that Osama bin Laden had thousands of tons of anthrax and on and on and on. And then he ties it back into 9/11, which the marching orders in the Bush campaign, of course, the Bush administration for the last 2 years have been, and they're continuing to do this, by the way. Whenever you discuss Iraq or Saddam Hussein, always bring up 9/11, even though there's no connection between the two. And here he goes. What part of us is he speaking to? And notice the tonality.
We've experienced the horror of September the 11th. We have seen that those who hate America are willing to crash airplanes into buildings full of innocent people.
And then he just has gone through this long speech about how Osama bin Laden hates America and has all these weapons, has chemical weapons, biological weapons, nuclear weapons, which continues.
Our enemies would be no less willing. In fact, they would be eager to use biological or chemical or a nuclear weapon.
This is speaking to the fearful part and making it even more fearful.
Facing clear evidence of peril, we cannot wait for the final proof, the smoking gun that could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
And for many people, there is that fearful part, and that fear was met. Now, here's John Kennedy speaking to the fearful part. This, again, during the Cold War, but saying something quite different. He's raising us, just like Churchill did.
Let every nation know, whether it wishes us
well or ill, that we shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
To assure the survival and the success of liberty. Ending on a positive note. And here again, as well, Jack Kennedy from the his fourth debate with Richard Nixon. This Kennedy. Now, notice again, the Nixon was trying to sell fear of, you know, the commies are going to get us. Here's Kennedy.
I believe it incumbent upon the next president of the United States to get this country moving again.
Now notice the use of visual metaphor, which is coming in just a second, but here's kinesthetic metaphor, moving again. He's going to use multiple visual, kinesthetic, and auditory.
To get our economy moving again. To set before the American people its goals, its unfinished business.
So they're setting out the vision.
And then throughout the world, appoint the best people we can get. Ambassadors who can speak the language. Not merely people who made a political contribution, but who can speak the language.
People who can actually, which is, you know, a modern problem.
I believe that this party, Republican Party, has stood still, really, for 25 years, its leadership has. It opposed all of the programs of President Roosevelt and others. Minimum wage and for housing, economic growth and development of our natural resources, the Tennessee Valley and all the rest. And I believe that if we can get a party which believes in movement, which believes in going ahead, then we can reestablish our position in the world.
There you go. We can reestablish our position in the world. 10 minutes before the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush show, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews.
What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
A major power blackout sheds some light on problems with air pollution. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. In August 2003, 8 states and the province of Ontario lost electricity when power plants and electrical grids shut down. Researchers at the University of Maryland saw a unique opportunity in the midst of this blackout. It was a chance to find out how much air pollution originates at power plants. Laxin Marufu is an atmospheric chemist at the University of Maryland in College Park. He and his colleagues have been flying over Maryland for more than a decade to measure air quality. Marufu says the air is polluted by a lot of different compounds that come from a variety of sources. He says it's hard to determine how much pollution comes from each individual source, but the blackout suddenly provided an opportunity to study the effect of emissions from power plants.
By turning off power plants, while all other factors were kept fairly constant, it provided a unique opportunity to quantify directly and for the very first time the contribution of power plants to regional haze and ozone.
Just 24 hours after the blackout began, Marufu and his colleagues were in the air. They flew downwind of the blackout area and took air quality measurements. They compared their results with measurements taken before the blackout in the same locations. Marufu says they got a big surprise.
What was surprising was not the fact that we saw an improvement in air quality. We expected that. But what surprised us most was the magnitude. We did not expect it to be that big.
Marufu says emissions of sulfur dioxide dropped by as much as 90% and ozone dropped by about 50%. Marufu says that rapid change is encouraging. He says it shows that effective emission controls at power plants could improve air quality along the East Coast, and they could do it quickly. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We're just wrapping up this tools for activism session. And the point that I think is so well made by this, the Republicans under the Bush administration in particular have focused virtually all of their messages around fear. Look out. Osama's going to get you. Look out. Saddam is going to get you. Look out. The war on drugs, the war on... Lyndon Johnson, at least when he declared a war on poverty, it was not, you know, look how poverty's going to get you. I mean, it was framed in a more positive context, although the language was unfortunate. And now it's look out. Social Security is in crisis. And it's always appealing to that frightened part. Democrats need to be appealing to the hopeful part. Here again, I got to play John Kennedy here for you. Listen to his use of kinesthetic, that is, feeling-based words, how we can bear things, we can do things, the touchy-feely stuff, and his use of visual imagery, how the world sees us and what we must do. This is just.
And I believe that if we can get a party which believes in movement, which believes in going ahead, then we can reestablish our position in the world. Strong defense, strong in economic growth, justice for our people, guarantee of constitutional rights, so that people will believe that we practice what we preach.
This, once again.
And then, around the world, particularly to try to reestablish the atmosphere which existed in Latin America at the time of Franklin Roosevelt. He was a good neighbor in Latin America because he was a good neighbor in the United States. Because they saw us as a society that was compassionate, that cared about people, that was moving this country ahead. I believe it's my responsibility as the leader of the Democratic Party in 1960 to try to warn the American people that in this crucial time we can no longer afford to stand still.
Now there, he just used the word warn, but notice how he uses it.
We can no longer afford to be second best. I want people all over the world to look to the United States again, to feel that we're on the move, to feel that our high noon is in the future. I don't believe there's any burden of any responsibility that any American would not assume to protect his country, protect our security, to advance the cause of freedom. And I believe it incumbent upon us now to do that.
To move forward, to hold that vision, to hold a positive vision, even in the context of a warning, a positive vision. This is an aspect or a dimension of framing, but it's one that has to do with reaching the core part of people that is most easily encouraged, enthused, and engaged in getting them out there. This is something, you know, the Democratic Party, the Green Party, and activists among us, you can do it. You can do it. This is another tool for making change, for healing the world.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
A public defender has begun using Ohio's amendment that bans gay marriage to block prosecution of domestic abuse in unmarried heterosexual relationships. Passed in November, the Ohio amendment, in addition to banning gay marriage or civil unions, also prevents the state, counties, and cities from offering domestic partner benefits. However, the way the amendment is worded, it also bans creating or recognizing legal status for relationships of unmarried individuals that would give their relationship rights similar to marriage. On at least two occasions, the Cuyahoga County Public Defender's Office has argued that under the amendment, spousal abuse laws do not apply to unmarried couples. Lawyers told the Cleveland Plains Dealer they believe the amendment is a violation of the U.S. Constitution's 14th Amendment, which guarantees equal protection under the law.
St. Louis has become a hotbed of labor unrest lately. 1,700 nurses at St. John's Medical Center have been on strike for over a month with no new talks scheduled. Issues include the nurses having a voice in patient care. Nurses went on strike December 15th in St. Louis. They're still walking the picket lines, and they face many of the same issues there that nurses around the nation also face. St. Louis teachers, meanwhile, have set a strike date of Wednesday, January 19th. They're seeking pay parity with suburban St. Louis teachers. The teachers in the 32,000-student district rejected the St. Louis School District's final offer, and even though a teacher's strike in St. Louis would be illegal, the teachers' union there has authorized one anyway. The St. Louis Symphony Orchestra is also out in a labor dispute that has scrapped a scheduled concert this month featuring guest conductor Itzhak Perlman. The musicians have rejected a contract that includes a pay cut. On top of all that, Ford plans to close its Hazelwood plant in St. Louis, wiping out 2,700 jobs. That plant makes Explorers and Mercury Mountaineers.
To protest changes in patient and staffing ratios, nurses in California will be holding a funeral today in the state capitol. More than 1,500 members of the California Nurses Association are expected to attend. Prior to today's action, the association filed a lawsuit in Sacramento Superior Court against Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and the Department of Health. The suit says that the decision to roll back patient safety standards in California hospitals sets a dangerous precedent that threatens decades of health and safety protections for patients.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. FairJobs.org says over half the jobs that were created during the first Bush administration were agency, temp, and contingency jobs. The group says wages were stagnant for all sectors of the workforce. At least 5 million workers lost their health insurance, and outsourcing of jobs accelerated. FairJobs.org says efforts are underway to organize contingent workers, but many obstacles, including a Bush labor ruling that requires permission of temp agencies before workers can organize, stand in the way.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Tom DeLay is not merely covered in political slime. He seems to ooze it from within. Even when he makes a public show of trying to wash his hands of some of the unethical sleaze attached to him, the Republican majority leader ends up with more sleaze on him than ever, and he spreads it all over Congress. DeLay is so nasty that even the meek and weak House Ethics Committee had no choice but to publicly admonish him 3 times last year for various unethical lapses. Also, he's in danger of being indicted by a grand jury in Texas for what amounts to the illegal laundering of corporate money for state legislative elections. His Texas legal problem is sticky for Tom, since his own party's rules call for any indicted leaders to resign from their leadership post. No problem, figured Tom the sleaze. I'll just get the GOP caucus to eliminate this bothersome rule. Last November, they did just that. However, there was such an outpouring of public disgust at this I'm above the law ploy that even DeLay had to back off. In early January, he got the caucus to reverse itself, claiming that he didn't want to provide an issue for his political opponents. He was hailed by his colleagues as a magnanimous, selfless leader, with one Republican gushing, "I feel like we've just taken a shower." "No, you've just been taken." In the same meeting, DeLay got the GOP majority to fix the House Ethics Committee so it will be unable to pursue future cases against him. Under previous rules, if the two Republicans on the committee and the two Democrats could not agree about pursuing a complaint, the case went to a special subcommittee for further investigation. Under Tom's new rule, however, a split vote means the ethics complaint is automatically dropped. So simply by asserting party loyalty, DeLay can avoid any more annoying inquiries into his ethics. This is Jim Hightower saying, not only is Tom ethically impaired, but now so is the entire House.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Andrew Biggs. Andrew Biggs, you say. Who is Andrew Biggs? By the way, welcome to the program. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. TomHartman.com, the website, if you'd like to drop into our live chat room full of folks having one of the most interesting, thoughtful, insightful, intelligent, wise, witty, funny conversations on the entire internet. Yeah, you can get there. Andrew Biggs is the Associate Commissioner for Retirement Policy at the Social Security Administration. Now, here's the interesting thing. He's the guy who is now out stumping for Social Security privatization. He's in charge. He's the Associate Commissioner for Retirement Policy at the Social Security Administration. In other words, this is the guy who's in charge of making sure that your Social Security money is there in the future. So why is he out campaigning
to destroy the government program of Social Security and replace it with a private for-profit corporate program for Social Security. Could it be that before George Bush appointed him to this position, he was the former assistant director of the Cato Institute's Project on Social Security Privatization? Could it be? You know, the Cato Institute, the libertarian, pro-corporate, replace democracy with capitalism think tank, blurring the distinctions between an economic system and a political system? Could it be? Our question, why should we help George Bush's buddies make a fortune when there are some things the government actually does better? I mean, this is a legitimate question. Here's another example. All around the country, there are communities that are trying to place hotspots, Wi-Fi hotspots. For those of you who don't know what this is, it's an area where if you have a laptop computer that has a wireless card attached to it or built into it, the wireless ability to built into it, you can just sit down in anywhere in the city with your computer or anywhere in this hotspot. Sometimes the hotspot is only like, you know, a coffee shop. Sometimes it's a few city blocks. And in many cities, they're trying to make it, you know, entire neighborhoods, large chunks of the city. You can sit down, you go open your laptop, and boom, instantly, you're on the internet. Now, I thought, you know, I used to fly a lot, and they started putting these things in the frequent flyer lounges in the airlines. And I'm a member of the United Airline Red Carpet Club. And so I used to be. I think it's expired now because I've been flying so much the last year. And so I remember the first time I went in, and they said, "Hey, we've got this new T-Mobile hotspot here." And I said, "Great." And I popped open my computer, and I logged onto it, and it said, "If you want to use this, you have to pay us every month. You have to subscribe to it." Well, a lot of communities are trying to offer this for free to people. For free. It doesn't cost much. I mean, it's chump change to put one of these things up and hook it up to a good-sized pipe, a T1 pipe, into the internet. A few thousand dollars a month. And, you know, it's you know, a penny a taxpayer. It's nothing. But they are being fought tooth and nail. From New York to Austin, from Seattle to Philadelphia. Being fought tooth and nail by companies like Comcast, SBC, and Verizon. Why? Because these companies want to do like the T-Mobile folks did at the Red Carpet Club. They want to put the same thing in, but they want to charge for it. Well, of course they do. They're in the business to make a profit. And they're saying, how dare government do something that we can make a profit on? And this is where we get into the area of legitimate debate. Do communities want to provide themselves with free internet access? So the communities are viewing this as basically a variation on a public library. The public libraries, which Ben Franklin began in the United States, the first public library in Philadelphia, public libraries in the United States, where a bunch of folks got together, Ben Franklin led the charge and said, you know, education, having access to books, because back then books were really expensive and not most people couldn't afford more than a few of them. Having access to a lot of books is something that would be good for our society. It would be good for us to have an educated populace. There would be a social benefit to it. And therefore, it shouldn't be something that's only available to the wealthy. I mean, in fact, a sign of wealth back 200 years ago, 250 years ago, was the size of your library. It demonstrated not only wealth, but erudition and education. So Franklin came along and he said, everybody should have access to a library of thousands of books. Everybody. Even a person who couldn't afford to buy one single book, because there is a social benefit to it. Because ultimately down the road, we are going to have a better society if everybody in the society has access to the information in these books. If everybody in the society has an opportunity to read the classics, to read Plato and Aristotle, to read the Whig histories, to read the history of the Roman civilization and the rise and fall thereof, to understand how things work, to even be entertained, to read a good novel. that there is a social good. And so we all agreed collectively, and we have for over 200 years in the United States. In fact, even before there was a United States, we have agreed, our communities have collectively agreed, that there is such a social good that it's worth taxing ourselves to have libraries. It is worth the small cost. The library here in my town, which has thousands of books, there are three stories of books. I mean, it's huge for a little town of 9,000 people. Probably costs me, in terms of taxes, 5 cents a year. Is it worth 5 cents a year to me for there to be a public library in my community? I think so. I'm more than willing to pay for that. And clearly, all of the other citizens of my town are as well. Nobody's out there protesting, do away with the library. We don't want to pay that nickel. So communities are saying, now, public libraries, you know, books on paper are not going away. Thank goodness. I mean, it's just 'cause I have 16 books in print. They're not going away. In fact, book sales are going up. But there is a new source of information, a new way for people to be well informed. And this is the internet. And you could argue that the internet is more like a library. See, then is, for example, cable TV. So the argument for privatization says, if we're going to provide something to somebody that they want, they have to pay for it. I mean, communities could decide to tax themselves and provide free cable TV, for example. There are, in fact, some communities that do that. I was in a native community up in Canada that does that. But most communities don't. Most communities allow a for-profit corporation to offer television because they figure it's not an essential thing. If you don't have TV, you can still be well-informed. You can still get by. Is the internet becoming essential? It's frankly, I think it's arguable. You could argue it either way. But the bottom line is that we live in a democracy, and in a democracy, the people ought to be able to get together and decide this for themselves. And some communities will say, no, the internet is not like a library. We don't want to pay, you know, a penny a month, each one of us, so that everybody, so all of us, anybody can have access to the internet for free. I mean, it's not for free, of course, because you'd have to buy the computer to begin with. Although they're becoming increasingly ubiquitous. And so, you know, there's this debate going on, and there are some communities that have decided that this is the logical extension, not of cable TV, but of the library. Access to information. And therefore, we should, in the benefit, in the interest of having an educated populace, and for the public good, not to help out some poor person, but because it's better for all of us, even the rich among us, it's better for all of us to have a well-educated society with full access to information. We, the people, are going to offer free internet service, broadband internet service in our neighborhood, in our community, in our town. And there is this absolute battle going on. You've probably seen ads running on TV. Pass laws. We've got to pass laws to bring communications into the 21st century. Oh, yeah. It's all about money. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Whistle in Alabama, is on the line. Hey.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
I'm great. What's up?
I just want to let you know that looks like Judge Roy Moore is going to be running for governor of Alabama.
Well, surprise, surprise.
I'm just stunned.
Yeah.
It actually looks like right now that he has a chance at winning it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that doesn't surprise me either, frankly. I mean, you know, you've got a lot of very fundamentalist Christians in Alabama, and Judge Moore demagogued that issue very successfully.
Oh, yeah, don't I know it? I live down here, and it's almost painful.
Yeah, so this was just announced today?
Actually, last night they were talking about it on the news.
Yeah, last night. So very
on the
recently.
Local news here.
Yeah, very recently. Interesting. And I'm assuming he's a Republican.
Oh, yeah.
Does he have the, well, any minute now, I'm going to be getting, in fact, probably when I log on to my email after I get off, I'll have something there from one of the right-wing groups saying, please send money to Judge Moore. And You know, here's the flip side of this, is I just went on during the break, during the last break, top of the hour, I went on Barbara Boxer's website, which is, hang on just a second. It is, well, that's not it. I got it here someplace. It is boxer.senate.gov. And because I wanted to give her some money, I wanted to send her, you know, $10 or something, just as a token. I mean, I'm not a rich guy, $10 is a gesture. You know, I just wanted to say, Barbara, let me be a contributor to your campaign.
She's fighting the fight. She's one of the few that are doing it.
She's the only one. She's the only one in the whole Senate who stood up for the vote. I can't find a place on her website to give her money. So I've got it set up to send her an email as soon as I get off the air saying, you know, please let me know how I can send you $10.
But I'd like to see her run for president.
Yeah, but see, here we are. I mean, there's folks on the other side who are saying the same thing about Roy Moore right now.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, well, they're...
The battle is joined, Whistle. The battle is joined.
You take care.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for the heads up. I do appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Jason in Rochester, New York on the line. Hey, Jason, what's on your mind?
I think I'd also like to make the point that the technology of internet was paid for with tax dollars in the first place.
You're right. It was developed with tax dollars. Yeah.
Yeah. So privatizing it would be to hand over a public resource.
Which would be nothing new. You know, most drugs are developed by the National Institutes of Health or by funding, by universities funded by the National Institutes of Health, the majority of drugs. And yet the pharmaceutical companies, you know, charge us for them. Vioxx, for example, was developed to cost, I think, 34 million sticks in my head. Cost us millions and millions of dollars, taxpayer dollars, to develop these drugs.
Yep.
So, good point. Jason, thank you for making it. Excellent point. Thank you. Good to hear from you. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Stick around. We'll be back here. Exposing the con in conservative.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour. My name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
This job is so much more than a half-hour newscast.
Brian Williams on the NBC Nightly News.
These are very serious times. This is about our world, our children. This is about as high as the stakes
get. Ongoing engagement, firefighting.
Is my world safe? Is my nation safe? Is my family safe? That's our job. That's our duty. That's all that counts.
Reporting America's story. NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
My job is to tell the story of our lives.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Start back at this life, stretch myself back into the vibe. I'm waking up to say I've tried, instead of waking up to another TV guide. It's time now to turn around, turn and walk on this crazy ground.
And welcome back. 24 and one half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Did I say that too fast? 1-866-889-8894. Every now and then I get a message on the message board or an email from someone.
Say it slower, please.
Okay. And, but it's, sometimes you just get into a good rant and I, you know, it's, leave people on hold. But in any case, good morning. It's cold here, writes George, a friend of mine out in Seattle. And he says, I just read in the Seattle Times editorial section, reader's comments, a person stated that, quote, insurance company executives' bonuses are more than the insurance companies pay in malpractice claims each year. This is from the Seattle Times. Get this. The insurance companies pay out more in bonuses to their executives than they pay in malpractice claims. Could it be? I mean, it's in the reader's comment, the Seattle Times editorial section. I gotta track that one down. It's a good, nice comment, George. He says, by the way, how's Tom House Jefferson the mouse? I think he's fine. He says, I enjoyed listening to Cat over the airwaves when Lucky, his cat, heard the meow. He jumped from line next to the audio console and ran toward the monitor. It was great. Yeah, that was actually Higgins. That was a real cat here. My crazed cat who sometimes invades the studio. Anyhow, Walmart. Hey, Walmart alert here. Coming. Walmart duped local officials to build on holy site. You get this? I mean, this is just here we are talking about the public good. And certainly many, many, probably the vast majority of local governments have gotten to bed with Walmart in order to bring Walmarts into their community. I mean, they basically have to. There's a permit process and all this stuff in most communities. And they get the local politicians and, you know, on it goes. Well, down in Mexico, there was a bit of a problem, shall we say, in that Walmart wanted to build a Walmart on a location, the pyramids of Teotihuacan. This ancient pilgrimage site, this ancient historical site, it's listed by UNESCO, and I mean, this is a major archaeological zone. In fact, the name means the place where the gods were made. It receives more than 2 million visitors a year, tourists, you know, people, you know, coming to see this site. And so, quote, as a member of a local co-op of native peoples, the local Mexicans, Before the store opened, Walmart asked us to start making products, 200 a month, as soon as possible. This is like local handmade stuff, you know, that like they can sell to tourists. A member of the cooperative told the Sunday Herald, We are only a small outfit, and this was an important deal for us. We had to take out a loan to get it all done on time. When we finished, we tried to contact them to arrange delivery, but they never answered our calls and have never paid us. We have tried to contact them for months, but nobody wants to help us. Walmart said it would promote regional producers in the new store. We realize now that they were just using us so they can say on their website that they are working with the community. You get this? They came in and the local folks were saying, no, we don't want you here because you're going to compete with us and you're going to put us out of... Walmart said, no, we'll buy your local goods. You make the stuff, we'll buy it. They said, cool. They took out a loan. They started making the things. The Walmart got built. And Walmart says, nah, we'll import it from China. It's cheaper. Amazing. This is from the Sunday Herald, newspaper in Scotland. It wasn't well reported in the United States. Could have something to do with interlocking boards of directors. Maybe. Corporate interests. Who knows? But the article, Walmart duped local officials to build on holy site. On it goes. 29 minutes past the hour.
What do you get when you cross a ballerina with an insomniac? Someone who'll dance the night away. And that's what they're doing at a dance-a-thon put together by dancers and their community coalition to raise money for kids' after-school programs. And what do you get when people bring their groups together? Healthier, drug-free communities, especially for... So if you're involved with a group, contact your community coalition at helpyourcommunity.org or 877-KIDS-313. Because you get more when you get together. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
A public defender has begun using Ohio's amendment that bans gay marriage to block prosecution of domestic abuse in unmarried heterosexual relationships. Passed in November, the Ohio amendment, in addition to banning gay marriage or civil unions, also prevents the state, counties, and cities from offering domestic partner benefits. However, the way the amendment is worded, it also bans creating or recognizing legal status for relationships of unmarried individuals that would give their relationship rights similar to marriage. On at least two occasions, the Cuyahoga County Public Defender's Office has argued that under the amendment, spousal abuse laws do not apply to unmarried couples. Lawyers told the Cleveland Plains Dealer they believe the amendment is a violation of the U.S. Constitution's 14th Amendment, which guarantees equal protection under the law.
St. Louis has become a hotbed of labor unrest lately. 1,700 nurses at St. John's Medical Center have been on strike for over a month with no new talks scheduled. Issues include the nurses having a voice in patient care. Nurses went on strike December 15th in St. Louis. They're still walking the picket lines, and they face many of the same issues there that nurses around the nation also face. St. Louis teachers, meanwhile, have set a strike date of Wednesday, January 19th. They're seeking pay parity with suburban St. Louis teachers. The teachers in the 32,000-student district rejected the St. Louis School District's final offer, and even though a teacher's strike in St. Louis would be illegal, the teachers' union there has authorized one anyway. The St. Louis Symphony Orchestra is also out in a labor dispute that has scrapped a scheduled concert this month featuring guest conductor Itzhak Perlman. The musicians have rejected a contract that includes a pay cut. On top of all that, Ford plans to close its Hazelwood plant in St. Louis, wiping out 2,700 jobs. That plant makes Explorers and Mercury Mountaineers.
To protest changes in patient and staffing ratios, nurses in California will be holding a funeral today in the state capitol. More than 1,500 members of the California Nurses Association are expected to attend. Prior to today's action, the association filed a lawsuit in Sacramento Superior Court against Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and the Department of Health. The suit says that the decision to roll back patient safety standards in California hospitals sets a dangerous precedent that threatens decades of health and safety protections for patients.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. FairJobs.org says over half the jobs that were created during the first Bush administration were agency, temp, and contingency jobs. The group says wages were stagnant for all sectors of the workforce. At least 5 million workers lost their health insurance, and outsourcing of jobs accelerated. FairJobs.org says efforts are underway to organize contingent workers, but many obstacles, including a Bush labor ruling that requires permission of temp agencies before workers can organize, stand in the way.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
bringing democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Yeah, first it was Andrew Biggs. Now it's Sam Bodman. Andrew Biggs, who was with the libertarian Cato, that's not liberal, that's super conservative, Cato Institute's Project on Social Security Privatization. He's now the Associate Commissioner for Retirement Policy at Social Security Administration, put there by George W. Over at the Department of Energy, Sam Bodman is the guy that George W. has nominated to be our new Secretary of Energy, replacing Spencer Abraham, who was actually a fairly decent guy, I think. Perhaps in over his head with the Bushes in terms of corruption. But here we have Sam Bodman, the Secretary of Energy. This is the guy, says Jason Leopold on CommonDreams.org, this is the guy who for a dozen years ran a Texas-based chemical company that spent years on the top five lists of the country's worst polluters. Jason Leopold goes on to say, it's not just a few clouds of smoke emanating from an oil refinery or a power plant that got Bodman's old company, Boston-based Cabot Corporation, those accolades. That is one of the country's, we're not talking about Texas's five worst polluters. We're not talking about a county's, we're talking about the nation's five worst polluters. 54,000 tons of toxic emissions that Bodman's company's refineries released into the air in Texas in 1997 alone. That made that company the fourth largest source of toxic emissions in the entire state, and one of the top five polluters in the nation. Cabot is the world's largest producer of industrial carbon black, a byproduct of the oil refinery process. In 2000, which is the year that Bodman left Cabot to join the Bush administration as Deputy Commerce Secretary, Cabot accounted for 60,000 of the more than half a million tons of toxic emissions released into the Texas air, according to a report by the Texas State Summary of Emissions. This is not Greenpeace, my friends. This is the state of Texas. He also contributed to Bush's presidential campaign and to the Republican committees in the 1999-2000 election. He's the wealthiest member of the Bush administration. His net wealth estimated to be between $42 and $164 million. He may also be complicit. Complicit, notes Jason Leopold, in one of Africa's deadliest wars. In October of 2002, Leopold writes, Bodman's former company came under fire when a UN panel of experts produced a report accusing the company, along with several other U.S. corporations, of helping to fuel the wars in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. While he ran Cabot by purchasing coltan from Congo during the conflict, and, says Leopold, illegally plundering the country's vast natural resources. Leopold, who's the author of a forthcoming book called Off the Record, an investigative journalist's inside view of dirty politics, corporate scandal, and a double life exposed, says of Bodman, as energy secretary, he will be looking out for the energy behemoths he used to commiserate with while he was chairman and chief executive of Cabot. Folks like Vice President Dick Cheney. Many of those energy corporations have donated millions to fund President Bush's inaugural parties. By the way, are we having a war or a party? Or I guess we're going to have both. And Cheney wants Bodman to reward their pals by making a convincing case why the president's controversial energy policy should sail through Congress. The environment be damned. Where are the Democrats? Why is it that you have to learn about this on Common Dreams? Why are not senators and members of Congress on all the talk shows on Sunday morning talking about this? Why do I have a horrible feeling that this guy is going to be confirmed with few dissenting votes? Get a spine, Democrats! Or a lot of folks are going to be leaving your side, I'm telling you. I really don't think that the
that the folks high up in the Democratic Party, including John Kerry, have any clue. Have any clue how many Americans worked hard for John Kerry and the Democrats in this past election, not because they are loyal to the Democratic Party, but because they are horrified by George W. Bush, and they are desperately hoping that the Democratic Party will grow a spine and take on these cons. And to the extent that folks like Tim Romer, who voted against Bill Clinton's tax increase, his economic package, which led to 6 years of peace and prosperity, and voted for George W. Bush's so-called tax cuts, his borrowing money from our children to give it to his rich campaign donors. Yeah, yeah, that's Tim Romer's voting record as a member of Congress. Yeah, he was on the 9/11 Commission, and maybe he asked one or two hard questions. Even there, in my opinion, the real questions never got asked. The real truth never came out. That's a whole other rant. But I'm telling you, if the Democratic Party ends up with anybody other than Howard Dean heading the thing up, I have a deep concern for its future. Unless they decide to run Barbara Boxer for president in 2008. I would vote for her in a heartbeat, and I don't know that much about her. I intend to learn, though. Is it possible in America for a company, for a corporation, is it possible in America for a corporation to be run ethically and profitably? This is a really good question. The Seattle Times addressed this in their Pacific Northwest magazine recently. And one of our listeners shared this article with me. It's just remarkable. It's about a local store, Costco. You may have heard of Costco. You may not have heard a lot about Costco because, unlike Walmart, they have no PR department. They have no PR department. They do no advertising. The article starts out, Mary Graham's morning shift usually starts at 5:30, but some days she's in the food court by 2 a.m. Sounds like rough hours, doesn't it? So why is this woman smiling? How about a $13 an hour wage? Way fat for fast food work in Washington. Full medical and dental benefits for herself and her five children under the age of 14. A scholarship program and 2 weeks paid vacation. And a boss who helped arrange a schedule so she could be home to meet the school bus? That's Costco. She's 44. She's got a GED. And she says this is her first taste at the age of 44 of the American dream. Says Mary, it's not minimum wage. Obviously, it's more than that. I can afford a car. I can afford my kids' school clothes without help. I don't have to go to the food bank. I'm not on welfare. I appreciate it. I've never been able to do that before. The Seattle Times notes, economists will tell you there are at least two reliable legal ways to make money in America. One is to fleece the workers, taking not only their wool, but their skin. A proven model resulting, the Economic Policy Institute in Washington, D.C. tells us, is CEOs earning in a day and a half what took their beleaguered flock a year to earn in 2003. Yes, that's right. In 2003, average CEO pay for 1 day and one half day was equal to an entire year's salary for the average worker. That's one model. Or, notes the Seattle Times, there's the Henry Ford model. Pay people well enough that they stick around. Better yet, pay them well enough that they can even go out and buy something. Henry Ford doubled the average wage. Now, the truth be told, he was shamed into this by his bookkeeper and business partner and his wife. But nonetheless, Henry Ford doubled. The average wage being paid in Detroit at the time was $2.50 a day, and Henry Ford raised it, or perhaps it was per week, I don't recall, and Henry raised it to $5. And everybody said, why are you doing that? Have you gone nuts? And he said, I'm doing it because who am I going to sell cars to if nobody can afford them. I want my own employees to be able to afford them. Mary has even started saving in a 401k account to which Costco contributes, even if she doesn't. This year, she's able to afford a flute for her daughter in band at school. She took her first ever vacation to the beach with her kids this summer. Costco, one of the 10 biggest retailers in the world, publicly held, partly unionized. Costco is on its way to passing $50 billion in sales worldwide this year. They never advertise, no PR department. Jim Sinegal, president and CEO and director of Costco, says what our customers say about us is so much more valuable. Fairness to their customers, their suppliers, and their employees. A radical business strategy. No, it's the way we used to do business in America. I ran businesses in the 60s, in the 70s and the 80s. And, you know, we try and be fair to people. Treat people well. Pay them as well as you can. There was an ethic in America historically. You didn't just, you know, lay off people because you could. That you did what, you know, you do. But not anymore. Not anymore. Now in America, you've got the largest corporations in America, so profitable, their CEOs making literally hundreds of millions of dollars a year and hanging their employees out to dry. What has happened to our moral compass in this country? What has happened to our family values? 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Alan in Alabama on the line. Hey, Alan, what's on your mind?
Yes, I was pretty young way back in the late 60s and early 70s, but I remember the so-called hippie movement, and I thought it was pretty good. It seemed like more like a political movement also, and it emphasized the simplicity. And it seemed like something like that ought to come back again. It'll help out.
Well, yeah, to characterize the hippies in any one particular way would be pretty difficult because there were a lot of different dimensions to that. But there is a return to simplicity movement in the United States that's happening right now. A lot of people are trying to, they call it downshifting, you know, getting a smaller house, simplifying their life, reducing their expenses, getting ready for the economic disaster George Bush is preparing for us. And living more gently on the earth, consuming less, just as a matter of principle. A lot of people doing that.
Yeah, and a good way to fight back the Republicans is just to stay out of debt.
There you go. Yeah, for sure. Well said, Alan. Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it. Thanks for calling. And also, don't forget, January 20th, not one damn dime day, Franklin Roosevelt's picture on the dime. Don't spend even 10 cents.
Oh, just a whole lot, but we'll kind of keep it focused.
Okay.
I'm glad you came back to the moral values, because when I first dialed in, I was thinking, how can a supporter of Bush support the absolute the quitting the regulations, gutting regulations that's protecting them? And it just doesn't make sense to me. Then you went into the Costco. You realize Costco is getting battered in the Wall Street Journal because they treat their employees too fairly. They pay too much.
I know. The conservatives are not happy with Costco at all.
And you were an employer. I was an employer. Why is it not in my own best interest to give a person a wage so they hang around so that I don't have to spend all the money to train their replacements when they can't make it on what I'm paying them for? It seems like it is so self-defeating to try to screw your employees.
The big retail industry has an average turnover 200%. That means the average employee lasts about 6 months. And at Costco, turnover at Costco is near the industry average. So that means the average employee lasts a year and a half or so. A cashier at Costco can make more than $40,000 annually within 4 years. The average store manager makes $107,000 with a crack at $40,000 in performance bonuses on top. The company also pays hourly workers annual bonuses of $4,000 to $7,000. This is, of course, all for full-time people. But Costco offers a health plan that covers a larger percentage of employees than Walmart's does, and workers pay less for it. Costco, in fact, provides among the best wage and benefit packages in hourly retail, pays the same wage scale everywhere in the country.
And as a customer, when you walk into that store, well, when you hit the parking lot, it's clean. Everybody's having a good time. They hustle.
Yeah, I look forward to checking one out.
To
the best of my knowledge, there's not a Costco in Vermont, or if there is, I don't know about it.
Hustle and they have fun and they kibitz and whatnot, but when the day's done, they've done one heck of a lot of work.
Yeah.
And it just amazes me that the righties are allowing the deregulation to gut things that protect them and their families. And that
is, to me,
the most biggest disconnect to this whole mess.
And that's the disconnect, Roy, that has been promoted by right-wing talk radio all these years. I mean, and it still is. It's just this idea that you know, this I Claudius, this we are all separate individuals, that if you just get rich enough, you can, that if a person just gets rich enough, they could live in a gated community and not have to breathe the air the rest of us breathe somehow magically, not have to deal in the society that the rest of us deal in. And in, you know, some people, I think they actually think that they can pull that off, and it's they forget that we live in a society.
These execs wondering what their kids are going to do.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway,
yep.
Keep
thanks.
Up the good work.
I'll do my best, Roy. Thanks for the call, and keep spreading the word. I do appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush Show, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
With a Workers Independent News feature story, I'm Jesse Russell. Union members for bus companies in Queens and Brooklyn have been on strike for more than a week. On Friday, talks between the city and the Amalgamated Transit Union collapsed, leaving no relief in sight for 70,000 daily bus riders. WIN correspondent Sarah Turner reports from New York City.
I have to go all the way to Manhattan to work. So I have to take this bus to the subway.
One local Queens resident expresses the concerns many riders are experiencing as the strike enters its second week. Union members for Command Bus Company and Green Bus Lines have been on strike since January 9th. Sal Varagalia is president of ATU Local 1181. He says talks center around better health care and benefits. He spoke after negotiations broke down.
Go on until they come back to the table what they promised.
The mayor says the existing bus franchise system is not working and is in negotiations with the bus line owners to buy their companies and transfer them to MTA. Union leaders are angry the mayor won't discuss retroactive pay increases for the 2 years workers have been without a contract.
They pulled the wage package off the table on a promise if and when the MTA eventually does take over, they will address our wage issues. 2 weeks ago, those wage issues were on the table, and now they're off.
John Longo is president of ATU Local 1179. Mayor Bloomberg responded from City Hall.
The city has done everything in its power to settle this dispute and get the buses rolling. The offer we made is simply the best the city can possibly do.
No new negotiations are scheduled, and riders, for the time being, will have to find another way to work. For WIN, I'm Sarah Turner in New York City.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
When you were young and your heart was an open book, you used to say, live and let live.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. www.black-thursday.com. Black-thursday.com. Folks in the chat room just shared this with me. One of the folks, who was it? It's Neo Constipated who put it out there. Neocon? I'm not sure. Anyhow, Black Dash Thursday, remarkable website. Let me just leave it at that. Brian in New Jersey's on the line. Hey, Brian, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I work at a locally owned video game store. All of our employees get more than minimum wage. We have good benefits there. Whenever people find our store, they always want to shop more there because they say the chains don't treat them well, and I attribute that to low pay. But they also say that they want to support locally owned business.
Right.
We advertise on cable, but most people just don't even know about us. If I were to move into a community, how could I find out about the locally owned businesses and not have to go to a chain store or a big guy?
You plug into the local community. You get to know some local folks. You hang out. You walk around. I mean, it's going to depend on the community, of course.
I'm in a pretty suburban area of New Jersey. If I were to ask somebody about a video game store, they're not going to know my store more than likely. Is there a newspaper that maybe circulates the country or an internet website that you can just find locally owned businesses, or do you really have to get out there and walk the streets until you find it?
You know, I don't know of one. I really don't know of one, and it seems on one level that that's a market opportunity, that somebody could design a website called locallyownedbusinesses.com or something like that, and put together a directory and charge companies $5 a year to list themselves or whatever and make some money. On the other hand, I don't know how many people there are who are sufficiently conscious at the moment, because we've had, now it's been roughly 30 years since there's been any labor news or human economy news in the newspapers and on television. Virtually, with the exception of Lou Dobbs's news reports, virtually all of the news reporting is about what happens to corporations. And so a lot of people don't have the sensitivity you have, Brian.
Gotcha.
So maybe
I'll start that website.
Yeah, it's a possibility. Certainly it's an idea whose time, if it hasn't come, is on the edge of it. You know, is nearly arriving. So thanks for the call.
Thanks
Good
for
to
today's
hear from
show.
You. Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for listening. And thanks to everybody for listening. I do appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, telling the truth that multinational corporations, really rather you didn't know about. It's maybe you didn't even think about, but no, we're going to keep talking about this stuff day in, day out, day after day, sharing it with you. and hearing from you as time goes on. Thanks for being with us today.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing.